everybody, and welcome to our U.S. House of Representatives Candidates Forum. My name is Dan Rohr. I'll be your moderator for tonight's Candidates Forum. Last night, we had an informative gubernatorial forum. If you missed getting to hear it or see it, I would encourage you to go online to the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce Facebook page, or later on this week, I believe it'll be tomorrow, go to KMXT.org under their Elections 2022 tab, and you can listen to all three forums, the two that'll be tonight and the one that was last night. These fisheries forums are brought to you by the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce with our co-host, KMXT Public Radio Station. For those of you listening live on one of the public radio stations across our state, thank you for joining us. We are also streaming this event through Facebook Live, as I mentioned, so if you'd like to join us there, please go to the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce Facebook page. It's the main link. Just follow it from right there. So you ask, why fisheries? Let me tell you why. So Alaska's annual wild seafood harvest exceeds 5 billion pounds per year. The total value of landings at our docks throughout the state of Alaska is over $2 billion per year. Commercial fishing provides $5 to $6 billion worth of total economic activity in our state each and every year. In addition to that, the Alaska seafood industry is the largest private sector employer in the state of Alaska, employing 62,000 people as primary direct employment and another 10,500 as indirect secondary jobs. Alaska's representatives to the United States House of Representatives have a significant responsibility in presenting Alaska's fisheries issues to the rest of the House of Representatives. And so we hold this event to give our candidates an opportunity to share with us, the audiences across the state, what their knowledge is of the industry, as well as their opinions on various policy issues. Alaska's new ranked choice voting system has narrowed a large field to the four we have here tonight, and I'd like to thank our four candidates for all coming in to join us this evening. Tonight we have Representative Paltola, Governor Sarah Palin, candidate Nick Baggage, and candidate Chris By. So thank you all four for being here. I know Kodiak's not the most convenient place to always get to, so thank you for being here. I'm joined on stage on my left by Caleb Taylor. He's from the Alaska Sea Grant, and he'll be our timekeeper tonight. Hopefully he'll keep me and everyone else on track. And across from me is our group of panelists. They're going to be asking our questions tonight. They're all professionals from the fishing industry, from the seafood industry. So Teresa Peterson is a commercial fisherman who has also served in various political roles for the seafood industry. Currently, though, she's the Fisheries Policy Director for Alaska Marine Conservation Council. Next to her is James Turner. He was a commercial fisherman for a lot of years, but in 2013 he switched over to the processor side, and he's our Kodiak plant manager for Ocean Beauty Seafoods. And then next to James is Julie Matwayu. She's with the Alaska Sea Grant and is the extension agent for the Kodiak region. So thank you all three for taking of your time this evening to ask her questions. I want you to notice the logos on the screen behind you. Each of them have generously donated for this event this evening. I'm not going to read their names right now, but I will at multiple other times throughout the evening. I especially want to thank the Alaska Public Broadcasting Satellite System. Because of them, we're able to broadcast this forum and reach a statewide audience. So we appreciate public radio and all you do for each of our communities, helping keep our communities informed. So thank you for that. Because we are broadcasting live across the state through that system, we're going to need to take a couple of breaks. They're going to be exactly 59 minutes after the hour. That's going to pose to be a little bit awkward potentially at times. We're not going to interrupt a candidate in the middle of their question, but we may have to interrupt in the middle of a series of questions. So just wanted to give everybody a heads up when we have some taglines to read. So. Lastly, October is National Seafood Month, and Kodiak, Alaska is the number three fishing port in the United States, landing over 364 million pounds in 2020. So it seems only fitting to hold this event in Kodiak in the month of October. Kodiak's been holding these types of events for over 30 years to help inform voters so that they're prepared when they go to the voter box to be able to vote on fisheries issues. So thank you for that. Ultimately, the purpose of tonight's forum is for each of us to become more informed voters. Picking the best candidate for the job is always difficult, made more difficult because elections in Alaska are often close. Ranked choice voting has made that additionally complex for people. So with all of that, Kodiak Chamber of Commerce encourage each of our listeners tonight to vote on November 8th. All right, so Representative Mary Paltola, Governor Sarah Palin, candidate Nick Baggage, and candidate Chris By, again, thank you so much for being here tonight. We're going to begin the evening with each of you have opening statements of 90 seconds each. I told you offline, but just so the public knows as well, we have a time clock. When there's 30 seconds remaining, he'll switch the time to, or the clock to yellow. When it's at red, it's a hard stop. And then we'll get into our questions. But tonight, let's begin with our opening statements of 90 seconds, and we'll start Representative Peltola with you.
Thank you very much, Dan. My name is Mary Peltola. I'm a Yupik Eskimo from Bethel. I'm a lifelong fisherman. Actually, that's not true. I started fishing when I was six, but I'm a lifelong eater of salmon. My experience with commercial fishing is as a drift netter on the Kuskokwim. It was much more small scale than I think what most folks in Kodiak are accustomed to. It's just an open skiff with a full shackle net, only about 40 meshes deep because we're on the river. I grew up fishing all species of salmon. My dad had a tender boat. In Alaska, you can only have a permit if you're at least 12 years old. So when I was 12, he put a fishing permit in my name, and I was able to captain that boat for many summers. It paid, on the Kuskokwim, back when we had commercial fishing, it only brought in about $6,000 per permit, and that's not much money, especially compared to some other fisheries, but on the Kuskokwim, that was a significant amount of income for most households, and we have not been able to fish commercially since the 90s. All of our stocks are depressed for the exception of reds, but those run with our kings and our chums, which are heavily restricted, so we don't have many opportunities to even fish for reds at this point. So, my personal perspective is I want all of our fisheries to prosper. I want abundant stocks. I don't want to see any Alaskan communities, and that's my time.
Thank you. Governor Palin.
Oh, thank you so much, and I really, really appreciate this opportunity to speak to the wonderful people of Kodiak. I've been here many times, and my trips, it harkens back to sports in junior high and high school, being able to be here as a competitor. And talk about competition. Kodiak, you produce the athletes, the great cross-country runners and the great basketball players. It was always fun to be here. My dad was a coach, and I have great memories of the good people here. In fact, we were always housed out by your local families. I, too, as part of the commercial fishing industry, I so appreciate that this issue is of utmost importance to all of you, but it should be to all of us in Alaska. As a set netter on the Nooshigak in Dillingham for a few decades, it's near and dear to my heart personally that we have sustainable fisheries and that our children, our grandchildren, are able to reap the benefits that we have all reaped as commercial fishermen. Also as a sport fisherman, I live in the Matsu Valley now, and that's really big in the valley. I think I have a really healthy, balanced perspective on what it takes to manage our stocks, to manage the species, to manage the fisheries in general, to make sure that all user groups, all gear groups, everybody is accommodated because we're all in this together. And you know, when we talk about national politics, we are all in this together. Alaska has got to be united in order to have our interests met.
Thank you, Governor Palin. That brings us to candidate Nick Begich. You have 90 seconds.
Well, it's good to be back in Kodiak and see so many familiar faces. This is the third time that I've been down here in this calendar year. And every time that I come down, I learn something new about the fisheries, I learn something new about the island, and something new about coastal Alaska. Coastal Alaska is critically important to the economy of the state, has been since the beginning, even before statehood. And just this year, we've been down in Haines, Petersburg, Juneau, Ketchikan, Kodiak, as I mentioned, Wrangell, Cordova. You know, these are areas of the state that are critically important to rely on our fisheries to be sustainable, to have a sustainable maximum yield, which is our mandate under the state constitution. And making sure that we enact policies that support that is going to be one of the most important things that I do in Congress if you put me there. And I'm excited about this opportunity to discuss fisheries issues. As the single largest employing industry within the state of Alaska, this impacts families. It impacts people who have made long-term investments in the equipment and the training and the staff necessary to ensure that they have a yield that they can rely on, and that's important to me.
Thank you, candidate Begich. That brings us to candidate Chris Bai, again, 92nd intro.
Thanks, Dan. Look, unlike these other three, my experience in politics is about that big. So we're going to do a little audience participation. I encourage you to participate. First of all, I'd like to know of the folks out there, first, second, third generation fishermen, can you raise your hands? Perfect, keep them up. For those folks who support that industry, raise your hands. Awesome. Okay. If you desire this way of life for future Alaskan generations, put your hand up. All right, now take a look around. Right? Thanks. Look, right now, a number of Alaskans and a lot of people outside of the state truly believe that commercial fishing is a race to the last fish. Like, they believe that wholeheartedly. And in doing so, it undermines future Alaskans' opportunity as a commercial or subsistence or as a sport fisherman. You know, and seconds ago, as we looked around this room, we noticed right away that there is a disconnect between what Alaskans actually see as commercial fishery and what the rest of the state and the rest of the country look at. We got to fix that disconnect. Look, king crabs and king salmon and a whole bunch of other prized fish are dwindling. I was on the Yukon at Fort Yukon just recently, and they didn't get any fish at all. And that's sad. That's a way of life that's going away. We've got to fix that. So my name's Chris Bai. I am a fishing guide. I fish primarily for grayling. I wish I could be down here fishing with you guys, but that's just the way it is. I live in Fairbanks, so I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, candidate Bai. Thank you each for your opening statements. We're going to start off the evening with a series of short answer questions. As the evening progresses, as I told you offline, we're going to progress into some more difficult policy questions. They'll have various different lengths of time. In each one of those, as we go into those sections, I will announce how long you will have for them, and always consistently the clock will turn yellow at 30 seconds and it'll turn off when your time has elapsed or turn red. So I'm going to turn it over to our panelists. They have three questions to start us out this evening. Each candidate will answer each of the questions. If you need a question repeated throughout the evening, please don't hesitate to ask. They'll repeat it for you. This first section of short answer questions, you're intended to give a 30-second short response, and I'll turn it over to the panelists. I'm not sure which one of you is going first, but Julie, take us away.
Yes, thank you again for coming to Kodiak to join us. We decided we're just going to run down the table. We're going to begin with Governor Palin and then proceed. Each question I'll read the question and it'll be addressed to each of you, and then we'll rotate through the panel here. So, Governor Palin, the first question is for you to start off. How often do you eat seafood?
I don't eat red meat anymore, which a lot of people are surprised because I am a hunter. But I feed my family that. So I eat a lot of fish because that's where I get my protein. I love our salmon. My freezer is full. And as often as I can, I promote the health benefits, the wild organic benefits of our seafood. And it's around the country, that's what I'm promoting. And it's a pleasure to be able to do so, that wild organic protein.
Candidate Bai?
If I can beat my kids... I eat quite a bit, but my boys eat a lot more fish than I can consume.
Representative?
I'd say I eat seafood about 4 or 5 times a week, and if I'm not eating seafood, I'm eating moose meat.
Thank you. And candidate Begich?
Probably once a week. I get on down to the White Spot Cafe in Anchorage. They got a great halibut sandwich. If you haven't been down there, it's my full endorsement.
Mine too.
Norton Sound Seafood makes a mean salmon burger.
Yes, they do.
All right, thank you.
Okay, second question. We're going to start with candidate Bai. What is your favorite whitefish to eat?
Sheafish, without a doubt.
Representative Pelletol?
Probably literally whitefish. On the Kuskokwim, we have broad whitefish, and I eat a lot of that in our dessert. On the Kuskokwim, even our dessert has fish in it.
Candidate Begich?
Halibut, yeah.
Halibut?
Yeah.
Governor Palin?
Oh, definitely halibut. Olympia, beer batter, and yeah, with the agoutic, it's whatever fish we have in the freezer that we can mix with. Not the seal oil, because I'm not that.
No, I don't need seal oil for dessert either.
Yeah.
Welcome to Kodiak, and thank you so much for coming. So our next question, we'll start with Representative Peltola. Have you ever fished commercially, and if so, what fishery? Share more.
Yeah. Thank you. I have fished commercially for kings in June, chums and reds in late June, July, and silvers in late July and August.
Thanks. Candidate Begich?
I have not fished commercially.
We can help you.
I've been a proud commercial fisherman, again, a set netter on the Nooshigak in Bristol Bay, but also spent a season in Dutch, in a paleo crab season just on a processor, and then row packing plants in Dillingham, doing that typical Alaskan college kid thing too, working in canneries. And my kids' grandparents helped start the fishery in Bristol Bay, as a matter of fact, Al and Lena Andre. They're kind of well known for having started it, so I have those kind of roots too.
Thank you. Candidate Bai?
No, I just guide. I guide for grayling and northern pike, and if I have to, lake trout. But they're a little tough to catch sometimes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you to our panelists. Those are just, want to start out with some fun get-to-know-you questions a little bit, but we're going to start right off into some harder policy questions, a little longer answer format. You'll each have 2 minutes to respond to the questions. I do want to give you all a heads up, like I did it beforehand, that somewhere in the middle of this series of questions, we're going to hit 6:59, and when we hit 6:59, we will have to pull away for 1 minute. That'll give you a second to get a drink of water, and then we'll jump right back into it. But I want to turn it over to our panelists, but just want to remind everybody, you have 2 minutes to respond. Again, the light will turn yellow when you have 30 seconds remaining, and red when it's time to stop. So with that, we'll turn it over to our panelists, and take us away.
Okay, we were going to start with Representative Peltola. You can answer this question first. What are the biggest challenges you see facing the Alaska seafood industry from the federal perspective, and what can be done about these challenges?
Well, I think it's this new paradigm that we're in, and certainly this is not holding true in Bristol Bay. Bristol Bay had a very abundant run, I think over 80 million reds came back this summer in Bristol Bay, but so many of the other regions in Alaska have seen a real paradigm shift in abundance. When I was growing up, abundance was kind of an understatement. When I was using the outboard to get to our fishing spot, you couldn't help but hit salmon with your lower unit on the way to the fishing hole. So many stories from people that I know who, if you set your net on the 4th of July and you don't bring it right back in, your net is going to sink with chums. Everybody has their accidental 200 chums story. Well, that is not the story now. Two summers ago, Mike Williams, who is from Akiak, I know you have a Mike Williams here in Kodiak too as well, but we've got one on the Kuskokwim, and he is accustomed to harvesting 2,000 chums a summer for his dog team. And two summers ago, he was able to catch 2 chums. I caught 11, and I was a highliner on our river. So, and I don't think the Kuskokwim is unique. I think Cook Inlet has seen issues, Kenai, Southeast, the Yukon, Norton Sound, many places on Chignik. This is not just a single river issue. This is, I think, across Alaska, and it's a concern to me, and I think that we need adaptive management that cannot just react, but react quickly and act. And I think that we need to make sure that we're doing as much research and surveys as we possibly can, as well as adaptive management. I don't think we should be waiting until all of the research is conclusive and peer reviewed before we take action. I think that those things have to be happening in tandem.
Candidate Begich? I can repeat the question too if you...
Sure, that'd be great. Yeah.
Okay, great. What are the biggest challenges you see facing the Alaska seafood industry from the federal perspective, and what can be done about those challenges?
Yeah, so I do think that we have a great deal of variability in the yield that we're seeing across the state. As was mentioned, we did see a record harvest in Bristol Bay, but that was not consistent throughout the state. And it depends on the species, it depends on the location. You know, I think that One of the challenges that we continue to see in the state of Alaska is a jurisdictional conflict between state managers and federal managers. And those fishery conflicts take user groups and pit them against each other, and it can create a lot of unnecessary problems. I think we need a unified framework for managing our state and federal waters and more communication among those groups to make sure the policies remain consistent. When we're managing the same, essentially, fish stocks and species populations. So I think that's something that the federal government can do. I think the federal government is also perhaps doing a little too much with this new Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization bill. This is a Democrat-pushed bill led by a legislator from the state of California. This is something that I would like to see more input from and broader bipartisan support.
Governor Palin?
The federal government is in the business of this huge overreach right now in all aspects of Alaskans' lives, all aspects of our economy, including the fisheries. Yes, they're obligated to protect our federal waters. That's their job. However, they do not allow enough local input when it comes to fisheries that are closer to home. And that's key to having a cooperative and a successful agenda for our fisheries, is to allow that local input. I don't see much of that coming from the feds, because we have these faceless, nameless bureaucrats and politicians in far off Washington, D.C., thinking that they know best how to develop and to exploit responsibly Alaska's resources, and yet they don't. Alaskans are able to manage our fisheries, our other natural resource, renewable resources that God has provided for us, better than they know how to. So they need to allow more Alaskan input, and I don't see that right now. In fact, again, in all aspects of our economy, Alaska as a whole, the federal government needs to get off our back. It needs to get back on our side and allow Alaska the primacy, the access to our resources, allow us to have that say, again, proving that we are more responsible, we can be more ethical than any other state, any other country, when it comes to developing our God-given resources, including a renewable resource like fish.
Thank you. Candidate Bai.
I'm with these two. No, actually, look, Miss Mary brought up a really good point, right? These stocks are down. I mean, I was in Galena just 2 weeks ago. They're not getting any fish. There isn't a Walmart there. There isn't a Safeway in Galena. They have an AC store. And you can't buy much for $100. It's just how it is in the bush. They rely on those kings and those chums in order to make it through the winter. You know, and I think we need an adaptive, reflexive response, not just at the federal level, but at the state level. And they need to be integrated so that we're not stepping on each other's toes, so we're not having a lawsuit on the Kuskokwim so Native folks can get their fish, because they don't have a Walmart either. You know, and Ms. Palin is correct. The D.C. the decision makers in D.C. rarely suffer the consequences of their voting record, nor of the regulations that they put in. And we've seen this time and time again, and it doesn't matter if we're talking about fisheries or we're talking about immigration. They rarely feel those consequences unless someone sends them on an airplane to some rich place, right? And then we're just using them as a pawn, just like what we're using folks on the Kuskokwim or folks on the Yukon. They're not getting their fair shake. I think it's time that we put some of these rural communities on some of these boards so that they've got a voice so they can be heard. Right now, I don't think people in Galena, Caltag, Aniak, are being heard, and I think that needs to change.
Okay, question number two is a little bit long, so I may have to repeat a couple times. Hopefully not. The House Resources Committee has proposed several changes to Magnuson-Stevens Act. For example, some examples of the proposed changes to the act include adding two designated Alaska tribal seats to the North Pacific Fishery Council, Management Council, changing national standard number 9 by removing the key phrase "to the extent practicable," Regarding bycatch minimization, making substantial modifications to an essential fish habitat provision and reducing harvest limits for species that are defined as forage fish by the Secretary of Commerce, which likely includes Alaska pollock and Alaska sockeye salmon. Do you support these changes or other changes to the bill? And if so, what would they be? We will start with Candidate Begich.
So I would not support this version of the reauthorization for Magnuson Stevens. I think that, as I mentioned a moment ago, the fact that this is being led by a California congressman, and this is his version of a vision for coastal Alaska, does not sit well with me. I'm very concerned with some of these changes that are being proposed, not because I don't think that all user groups should be represented. They should. But Alaska does have control of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council voting seats. And I'm encouraged to see their Alaskan seats. But nevertheless, you know, I sort of question that decision to so radically change the composition of the council. You know, there are other concerns specifically as it relates to bycatch, and I'm very concerned about bycatch. Let me make that clear. I think bycatch is an issue that we have to contend with. It's been an issue with us for a long time. I think we do well to acknowledge that if we're looking for a long-term sustainable fishery. But by removing that language, we now press into the courts a matter that could put family businesses and larger businesses at risk and at jeopardy. And, you know, these businesses are making large capital investments that span many years in horizon, and this has the potential to completely close off fisheries without any really answer to, you know, what happens to those businesses, what happens to those investments, what happens to those families, and that is of concern to me.
Governor Palin?
Well, you know, I support the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and if there's going to be a revisitation of the act, it needs to be on looking for a clear definition between, say, overfishing and illegal fishing. And there needs to be more clarity when it comes to how we can enforce our fishing zones more successfully. When it comes to the inside baseball specifics of all that you had just read there, in a debate, it's kind of difficult to say absolutely yes or no, whether you would support something or not, when you don't have it in front of you. You know, you don't know the context. You can't read all of it. But when I hear has the way that the question has been posed, no, there's a lot of subjectivity, a lot of arbitrary judgment that sounds like it would go into making the decisions that this change would lead to. So easy for me to say right now, no, I don't support it right off the bat because I don't know enough about it. I don't think any of us know enough about it intricately. You know, that's the problem with federal government, too. They allow changes to be made where there's so much ambiguity. There is so much flexibility given to the bureaucrats. The bureaucrats get to make the decisions. They don't care about the science. They care about the politics involved, and that's what I would be afraid of. So on the surface, I would say, nope, I don't support it because I don't have it in front of me.
I need to interrupt us right there. You got saved by the bell, I suppose, right? I'll give you a few more seconds. We've got a couple of seconds, and like I said, we need to do station identifications. We really appreciate public radio broadcasting this statewide for us. That's not without its complications, just because obviously we're here and they're spread out throughout all the state. I got 7 seconds, and then I will read their 1 minute tag and give you guys an opportunity. If you want to grab a drink of water or something of that nature, please feel free to. All right. You are listening to Statewide Fisheries Forum from KMXT Kodiak, heard statewide, courtesy of the Alaska Public Broadcasting Satellite System. Thank you to our candidates, Candidate Chris Bai, Candidate Nick Begich, Governor Sarah Palin, and Representative Mary Peltola. Thank you for being here this evening. Thank you for coming in on such a lovely Kodiak weather day, right? Thank you to the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce for organizing this event and to KMXT for broadcasting the forums and making this signal available to the Alaska Public Broadcasting Network. Last night we heard from our gubernatorial candidates, and if you missed that form, you can view it starting tomorrow at you can listen to it starting tomorrow at KMXT.org. Follow the link labeled Elections 2022. Fishing is a vital industry, not only in the community of Kodiak, but as you've heard tonight, throughout the state of Alaska and the economies of Alaska. The people of Alaska have depended upon fisheries resources for thousands of years and hope to do so far into the future. So we're going to go back to hearing from our candidates for U.S. House of Representatives. Thank you for letting me interrupt there. I'm going to turn it back over to you, James. I do believe it'd probably be appropriate to reread the question both for our listening audience but also for our candidates as well. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Candidate Bai, you're going to have the same question, and that question is, the House Resources Committee has proposed several changes to the Magnuson-Stevens Act. For example, some examples of the proposed changes to the Act include adding two designated Alaska tribal seats to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, changing National Standard 9 by removing the key phrase, to the extent practicable, regarding bycatch minimization, making substantial modifications to the essential fish habitat provisions, and reducing harvest limits of species that are defined as forage fish by the Secretary of Commerce, which likely includes Alaska pollock and Alaska sockeye salmon. Do you support these changes or other changes to the bill? If so, what would they be?
Thanks for asking that question. I just got done doing a deepish dive on that Magnuson Act. I would say at this time, no, because it lacks local and state input. It's literally being drawn up by bureaucrats who will never suffer the consequences of their decision-making in D.C. I do appreciate the fact that they put at least two folks on there from the tribal community. I would appreciate it if it was more interior-focused and not necessarily based on a color of skin. But I do appreciate that they at least have some upriver communities to be represented. The other thing I would say is that when you start going through this act and you see the wide range of it, you get a good example of the overreach that the federal government deals with in every day. And they simply cannot meet expectations of you and I. That's not what those laws are designed to do. And that is disrespectful to all Americans. Right? We can't have an overreaching government that simply thinks they can solve all ills by passing a law in D.C. and thinking it's not going to have ramifications back here at home. And that's clearly what they're trying to do. I appreciate that question.
Representative Peltol.
Thank you, James. I am carrying forward Don Young's legacy in working on this bill. The last time I spoke with Don directly was in November of 2021, and it was about the two extra seats on the council for Alaska Natives. He was in strong support of that. He told me that personally. He said that in the committee. He said that to Representative Huffman, who's the co-sponsor of this legislation. And I was very proud to have worked on the bill a couple weeks ago doing the markup in Resources Committee. I want to say that the reason that this effort came about is because the process of working with the council works well for the biggest, the wealthiest, and the most connected among us. But if you don't happen to be big and wealthy and connected, it is very hard to get any inroads in the council process, even in the committee process. So I am in support of that. I believe we need to be extremely thoughtful when we make changes to Magnuson-Stevens Act. I do think that a lot has changed since the last reauthorization in 2007, including climate change. I think that more needs to be done in terms of a better process for fish disasters. We've had numerous fish disasters across the state of Alaska, and there aren't timelines within that process. I'm also very committed to working with Senator Sullivan and Murkowski to ensure that Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorization process is bipartisan and results in a law that's good for Alaska. Senator Sullivan has a role in moving it through the Commerce Committee. Senator Murkowski has a role in funding it on appropriations. And I do think it has been a bipartisan effort. And I know that Representative Huffman spent a year or more doing listening sessions throughout the country. So I do think that this has been a good process. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll be reading the third long answer question, and then we're going to move into some paddle questions. And this one we're going to start with Governor Palin. The Magnuson-Stevens Act requires bycatch in all fisheries to be minimized to the extent practicable. Science suggests that climate and ecosystem changes rather than bycatch are the main factors behind large stock declines for several important fisheries in the North Pacific. How would you balance the interests of fishermen and processors of these more robust fisheries with the interest of stakeholders of struggling fisheries?
Well, I think the bycatch issue is of even more import and more, it's more significant even than what the theories on the, you know, the differences in the climate and the climate change are. The bycatch issue, that's obvious. You can be out there watching what happens. And this decimation of some of our stock because of the bycatch issue, it's like we're the only ones who seem to care. Other countries, other areas don't seem to care, and it comes down to enforcing our laws. You know, we can talk a lot about studies of the climate change, studies of who's doing what out there, but all there seems to be coming from the feds is studies and talks. Unless we enforce our existing laws and figure out how to balance all of this, especially, again, tackling what's most obvious, and that is this disrespect for the conservation that needs to be first and foremost in our fisheries by, again, other countries, especially trawlers. We're never going to fix this issue. And, you know, it's easy for too many people to just automatically point fingers that, oh, because there is climate change, oh, because there is. I would like to see us enforce laws, us follow the science, get politics out of so many of these issues, and that way there can obviously be more balance.
Thank you. Candidate Bai?
Yeah, I appreciate this question. I just spoke with 14 commercial fishermen yesterday afternoon. We were all at the river up the road here, Olds River, I believe, and we weren't catching a thing. The sea lions looked like they were fat and healthy, but we didn't catch much. But what was unique about that is some of the regulations that they informed me on, and it was really eye-opening. Yes, bycatch happens. I think everybody in this audience would agree. There is ways to limit it. And I talked to one of the boat captains. He's like, look, if I get X number of bycatch, whatever prohibited species it is, I literally lift my nets up, Chris, and I move to another location to avoid getting any more of the bycatch. So there's an active fisherman out there trying to reduce the bycatch. However, bycatch is still important. If we're going to believe the climate folks, bycatch is important because it also decimates part of the fishing stock. And so we've got to balance that out. I honestly think within this room we probably have the answer to that. If we're going to rely on people in D.C. or think tanks from California to come up with the solutions for that, I think we're going to be sorely disappointed every time. Mm-hmm. And because it lacks the input from those fishermen I met down there at the river. It lacks the input from, you know, Jason out of North Pole who regularly goes down and dip nets river out of the copper or dip nets salmon out of the copper. It misses Joe out of Galena, who's trying to get his kings for the year. And that's where it really comes down to. It really requires that input from the local and state level, and I think that's what's missing in D.C. right now. Thanks for that question.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Peltola?
Thank you. And National Standard 9, as was mentioned a minute ago, it strikes to the extent practicable and inserts the council shall reduce bycatch. And as a fisherman, I know bycatch is just, you know, something that we all face. Bycatch is just part of fishing for fishermen. And when you're talking about the smallest boats, it's a very little consequence overall. And I'm not interested in punishing small boat fishermen. And I appreciated what Chris said about certain fishing vessels that when they are in an area and they're catching too many of the fish that they're not targeting, they pick up and move. And there are a lot, most of the vessels in our waters are good fishermen. And I think fishermen by nature are conservationists. That's the resource that we depend on and we want to make sure is there for the next generation. But when we're talking about industrial fishing, we're talking about millions of metric tons of juvenile halibut, salmon, and crab thrown overboard every year. And this has been going on for 30 years. And again, we're not talking about 100 fish here or 20 fish there. We're talking about millions of metric tons per year for 30 years of juvenile salmon, halibut, and crab. And I think salmon people have it bad, but actually crab and halibut people have it a lot worse. The fishermen for halibut and crab have been suffering a lot longer because millions of metric tons are being thrown over every year. And this is a concern. This is waste, and it is going to catch up with us. And I don't think it's responsible for all of the depletion, but it isn't helping. And when we've got people whose only livelihood, basically, the only way they put food on their table is by fishing and hunting wild stocks, and they're ratcheting back and they're at a third of their need, and industrial fishing isn't ratcheting back, something's wrong.
Thank you. Candidate Begich.
So I think we need to be careful when we assign blame to climate change for the problems of the world that we experience. And part of the reason that I think this is a problematic issue is that there's nothing we can do about it. There's no issue. There's nothing that Congress can do to change the climate of the earth. But there are things that we can do to manage our fisheries in responsible ways. And I think we've talked about some of those things. I think bycatch is one of those issues. But there's other issues as well, something that hasn't come up yet tonight, and that's predator control. You know, this is something I hear from people in coastal Alaska all the time, that the predators of these fish are getting out of control, and we've got to do more to manage predation. We also need to make sure that we're not overstocking the ocean with certain biomass. I think that's important as well, that we're not inadvertently interrupting the food chain out there and interrupting other species and other stocks. So I think the Salmon Task Force is the right kind of approach. You know, this is a way for us to go forward and start to collate and collect some of the science that's out there that's disparate and try to make better sense of it all at a macro level. I think that's something we need to do, not just with salmon, but with other species that are under threat and other fisheries that are under threat. I think that's really important. And also taking a look at how we can be more responsive with disaster relief, fishery disaster relief. That's really important as well. And if we start to detect that certain fisheries are failing because of climate change, then maybe we need to make some long-term policy decisions. But those are the decisions that need to come not from people in D.C., but from the council, because the council is representative of the people that are closest to the industry, the people that are closest to the science, and those are the folks that need to be making that policy, not individuals in Congress.
Thank you for your responses to those three longer format questions. We are going to come back to some more policy questions, but as I said at the beginning of the evening, we don't want to just hit you hard policy question after hard policy question. In front of each of you, there's a little paddle. It has a green yes and a red no on it, and we're going to ask you some fun, I guess, yes and no questions. If you would do us a favor, hold that up. Hold it up for long enough for people to get a chance to see it. One problem in our little...